Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. I'm your host, Deanna Chapman, and today I am joined by Derek Sykes, and we're talking all about Joyland. It's one of King's hard case crime novels. It is the second of three now that later is out, but Derek, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me on.
Of course, and since it is your first time on the podcast, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I am a theater major at the University of Minnesota. That's kind of what my main thing is. I have a horror podcast, though, called And That's It, featuring Juno and Derek, which I host with my best friend, Juno. We kind of just talk whatever we want to, mostly horror movies. Right now we're talking Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, which is a lot of fun to dive into those series. But Stephen King was kind of my entryway into horror. Like, my mom is a huge fan of his books. We've had all of his books basically all of my life. Like, they're some of the first movies I remember seeing. So it's exciting to be here talking about a book I remember being excited for up to its release.
Yeah, it's funny. I didn't get into King until way more recently. And really, it kind of started to snowball with this podcast because I had read a few books here and there. I had read The Shining, The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, The Green Mile, I believe, and maybe a couple others. But it was a similar situation. The books were just always around, and they were actually on a bookshelf right outside my room at one point. So I would walk by them all the time, and I'm just like, you know, I should read these eventually. And then this started, and, you know, I've made it to 2013 in his bibliography. That's pretty good. Pretty good. Almost done here.
Yeah, I mean, certainly in the bibliography of Stephen King, that's a fair chunk.
Yeah. Every time I finish a book, I'm like, okay, we're closing in.
I mean, yeah, Carrie came out in the 60s, right? Like late 60s? So
late 70s, I believe.
Okay.
Still a long time ago.
You've made quite some progress.
Yeah, and let me tell you, Derek, I was excited that this was a short book for King, normal size book for most people.
Yeah, he does love his world building.
Yeah, I have noticed, though, that the hard case crime books in particular tend to be of a shorter length. And I don't know if that's just because of the publisher being different and they maybe have different criteria for their books, because I do own one other hard case crime book that isn't by King, and it's roughly the same size too. So there seems to be some uniformity with those books, at least from what I have seen. But Joyland features our main character, Devin Jones, who more often than not is called Jonesy, which is why I always have to look up character names, because half the time they end up with nicknames and I'm like, but what's your actual name?
Yeah, it's a thing he does, right? And he'll refer to them in narration by multiple things. And so you kind of have to be like, okay, so this person, he's Dev and he's Jonesy. Cool, got it.
Yeah, exactly. And to set up the story, Jonesy, Devin, whichever you prefer, is going through a bit of a rough patch with his girlfriend, and they're trying to decide if they want to take time apart. She does, he doesn't want to do that. And he ends up working at this amusement park called Joyland. And from King's description of Joyland, it very much feels like not necessarily small town amusement park, but you can tell right away that it's not like Disneyland or Six Flags or something like that. It's a much more local thing that doesn't feel larger than life necessarily.
For sure. It gives more carnival than like theme park.
Yeah, for sure. And I just love the way he describes the park throughout the book, because you can really put yourself in this story and feel like you're walking around this park with all of these characters that we see. And, you know, there are definitely some characters in this. You have the fortune teller, Rosie. You have the rooming house owner, Mrs. Shoplaw. And, you know, I don't know if I'm pronouncing a bunch of these names correctly, because when you read, you don't hear them. But then you have the much easier names to pronounce in Tom and Aaron. And this theme park, the name of it, you wouldn't think it would be dog themed.
Right. I mean, dogs are joyful, but Joyland feels like a very generic name.
Yeah, it really does. And you feel like you're just kind of going to get this generic look and feel with this carnival-esque theme park. But instead, it's just like beagles and happy hounds and things like that. And it really takes this idea that you have initially and kind of flips it on its head, because you kind of get this picture of this theme park one way, but then you're like, oh, but they threw a bunch of people in dog suits around the park. So then you're like, okay, this doesn't necessarily seem to mesh very well, but at the same time, I think it gives the theme park some personality that it wouldn't have had they just gone the generic route.
Yeah. And that's what I really love about really all of King's work, for the most part, is he's always so specific. Like, he gets what makes these, like, places significant, right? Like, with a small town, you know, like Derry or something, he's so specific about what that town is and what, you know, makes its heart. And really, he treats Joyland like one of his small towns.
He does. And I found myself getting a little disoriented when characters would leave the park. And I'm like, wait, okay, where is this in relation to the park? And I don't know if it's because I wasn't paying as close of attention when the characters were not in the park, but it was something where I was like, okay, hold on. There's a shop, like a little shopping mall all of a sudden. And, you know, he leaves and goes to the boarding house that he's staying at, obviously, but then he also visits another house. And I'm kind of like, wait, where is this in relation? And I think this is why I love it when books have maps at the beginning of them. And this happened most recently with Under the Dome. I was like, oh, thank you.
Well, yes, I'm sure that's helpful with Under the Dome, being that Under the Dome is also 1 million pages long.
Yes.
But I mean, Joyland, I get Joyland. I understand it. So my dad is from New Rochelle, which is this suburb outside of New York City.
Is that in Connecticut?
No, it's in New York.
Oh, okay.
But it's right by that.
I know some people like call Connecticut the suburbs of New York sometimes too. So I wasn't sure on location there.
Yeah, no, that is also true. There is a Playland. Like, I don't know if you've seen the movie Big, but Playland is where most of that action takes place. And the relation of Playland to New Rochelle in New York City reminds me a lot of a relation of Joyland to Heaven's Bay and Heaven's Beach.
Okay. Yeah, see, I grew up in Southern California, so theme parks like this didn't really exist. I mean, I guess you could think of, I don't even know, because it seems bigger to me, but Knott's Berry Farm was like the theme park near Disneyland that wasn't as big as Disneyland, and it wasn't like as big as Six Flags as far as the roller coasters go and everything like that. So it was like somewhere in between like small local town carnival theme park and Disneyland or Six Flags. So it was like that middle ground where you're just like, this is a thing. It's popular in this area, but I don't think you really had tourists going to Knott's Berry Farm in the same way you did with Disneyland, where you would have people from other countries coming. You know, maybe they would hit up Knott's Berry Farm if they found out about it, but most of them were there for Disneyland.
Totally. It really, I mean, and that's kind of also what makes Joyland feel very King-esque, is like he's dealing with local, like the problems are local problems, and unless it's one of his epics, King really likes local stories.
And he does such a great job of making you feel like you are in that community when he does that. And he really does that with this park too, especially once we find out that Jonesy wants to stay for the quote unquote off season while the park is closed, because they still need people around to make sure the rides are running and things like that. It's like these theme parks are closed for parts of the year, but they're never really vacant.
I mean, I understand that completely. I mean, I know, I just said my dad, like, is from New Rochelle, and that's true. I've been to New York many times, been in that area. I myself grew up in Minnesota, and actually I'm in Minnesota right now, but so I grew up in this town called Roseville, and we have the Minnesota State Fair in our town.
Okay.
And so the state fairgrounds, I've been there during the off season, and that really reminds me of Joyland. I mean, our state fair is, I think, much bigger than Joyland is, but it reminds me in that, like, you know, kind of a rite of passage for high school people is to, like, work at the state fair, and then you could work in a booth, or you can, you know, you could be a game hawker or something, and then you can work, like, custodial over the off season, which is most of the year.
Yeah.
But this whole kind of life, I mean, it, we weren't carnies, like, working at the state fair, but it reminded me a little bit of it. It's not exactly the same. There's also the time displacement, of course, but there was a lot of it that I recognized. And so I was able to connect with the life and connect with Jonesy, even though I don't necessarily think of myself as that similar to him. I understood his, like, choices and his emotions, which I really like.
Obviously, with this being a hard case crime novel, there's a crime. We have to talk about it. And what we find out as Devin and his friends find out is that there was a girl named Linda Gray, and she was murdered in the ride called Horror House, which is the only ride that is, like, dark and, I guess, kind of scary. And this wasn't the exact vibe I got from it, but it kind of felt like a play on Haunted Mansion or something like that.
Definitely. Like, I understood what the ride was supposed to be.
Yeah, because when you go to Disneyland, you're not thinking dark rides either, but then they have things like Pirates of the Caribbean and Haunted Mansion, and those are very dark inside. And that was kind of what it reminded me of, which was a fun little thing, but you have the fact that her ghost is still haunting this ride, and anytime someone would see her, it's like they didn't want to admit that they saw her too, which I think just added something a little extra to what was going on in that ride in particular, because there's a whole string of unsolved murders, which we find out later, and Devin makes it his mission to unravel this whole story and try and figure it out, because he's just so drawn to Joyland. And it's clear that he's kind of using Joyland as a coping mechanism, because he doesn't want to have to really emotionally deal with what was happening between him and Wendy. So you have that whole aspect to it as well. And this gives him something to do to take his mind off of everything else. And even though this isn't, like, a pleasant thing to look into, I thought it was really well done and added to his character, because King is really, really great at character work. And he does a very good job of building Devin up throughout the whole story. We don't get his entire story all at once. You know, we get this thing that happens to him that is a catalyst for everything else that he does after that.
I totally, totally agree. It's one of the things that I really admire about King's writing, even in books that aren't near the top of my list. I always feel like he does a good job of, like, dropping us into these characters. Like, we have an event that happens, usually an inciting incident, you know, which is a common writing thing. You need it if you're writing. And then rather than, like, having us get all this exposition up to the inciting incident, he uses the inciting incident to then tell us about these people, which is, I think, why his works have stuck around so long, really, and why so many of them are so beloved.
Yeah, he also kind of makes you wish you could visit these places, even though terrible things happen there. He paints them in such a way that you're inherently curious about them.
For sure. And I mean, with Joyland, more so than a lot of other places he writes about, I mean, even with the legacy of murder hanging over Joyland, it seems to be, for the most part, a happy and well-intentioned place. And then, I mean, we'll find out later, but, like, the haunting that's happening isn't even malicious, right? Like, it's just sad.
Yeah, it really is. And you feel like the entire time there's been no justice for years upon years. And we see moments where Devin kind of takes on this hero role. He saves this girl and then he saves a coworker, and the paper comes out and interviews him, which, you know, it's a small local paper, but it's a big deal in that town. And by the time we get to he's figured it out, you've done all of this buildup, and you know he's not going to just give in or give up at the last moment.
Right. We really see someone become passionate about something, right? And, you know, whether or not that's the healthy thing to do, because it's obviously, it starts as a distraction. I mean, he's this accidental hero, which King does a lot, but he's not someone who, like, he didn't come to Joyland to solve the murder, right? Like,
right.
He came to Joyland because he was a sad boy. And then he kind of just gets sucked in because he falls in love with the idea of Joyland, I think. And then he almost becomes like Joyland's protector in a way, even like if the epilogue reveals he wasn't entirely successful, like he learns a lot about himself, and he learns how to move on. And I mean, that's what this whole novella really is about. It's about moving on.
Yeah, and he's only able to do that as he fosters these new friendships and relationships. And one thing I wanted to ask you about was how you felt about the relationship between Devin and Annie, because it's clear Annie is significantly older than Devin. She has a son who, I don't know exactly how old he is, but, you know, he's not 5.
Yeah. Well, I like that, actually. I think it's really cool, because so often we get these stories and it's like the younger woman, right? Like significantly younger woman. And so this kind of flips it on its head, but it doesn't make it there's nothing weird about it. Like Jonesy and Annie just kind of come together naturally. And I mean, I love Annie as a character. I love that her thing is Annie Oakley. I think that's really fun. And I mean, I think it's great that the essentially female lead is this single mom who doesn't take shit and is really strong and really cool. Like, I was thinking about it and I was like, I'd love to be friends with Annie. I think Annie's great.
There's some ambiguity to her character too, because you get bits and pieces of her story, but she's a character who you don't need to know every single detail about. You can just kind of get the broad strokes and understand what she's going through without having to know, you know, her entire history from her childhood until now.
Exactly. And I think that's what works so well about the characters in this story is we don't need to know their entire history. We don't need long exposition monologues, because King makes them feel real. So like when you're with a real person, you know, you don't get everything right away at the beginning. You don't learn their entire history, right? It's things are revealed to you as it comes naturally. And then some things aren't revealed at all, but you still know the person. You still can have a connection with them. And Joyland, it has that magical realism, of course, that is a staple of King's work, but it really feels like it's this group of real people.
Which makes the story more fun, too. Because, like we said early on, this isn't a long book. I think my copy comes in, you know, a little under 300 pages. So by King standards, this is like a third of a book, you know? And it's always interesting to see what he's able to do with the shorter page count, because this isn't like The Dark Tower or something where we're getting sprawling descriptions or Roland telling lengthy, lengthy stories. Instead, we're getting a story that largely stays in one place. You know, with The Dark Tower, they're constantly on the move. So you have a lot more going on in the world as a whole, whereas this, you really just feel like Joyland is the central location, and anything else that happens outside of Joyland isn't necessarily inconsequential, but it doesn't really impact what is happening at Joyland.
Right. And I mean, in a lot of King's longer works, he'll take little traipses with minor characters for like a chapter. But here, it's really streamlined. And I think that makes Joyland one of King's most accessible novels, especially for first-time readers. I mean, my first King novel was The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, which I think is very similar in not only length. I mean, The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon is a little longer than this, but it feels very like, spatially, it has unity of space because it's mostly in one place. Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon, mostly in the woods. Joyland, yeah. Mostly in Joyland. And you're with a central character, even if there are other relationships going around. Like, this is Jonesy's story, right?
Yeah.
And it just works. I don't know.
It's also not quite a coming of age story, but he's at that college age where you're still figuring things out with your life. So it's not exactly like It or The Body, but you still have that feeling of this guy has a little bit more to learn about life before he really just dives in and starts to figure things out. He's very much in an in-between phase, if you will.
Right. And as a college student right now, I mean, I'm a junior in college, so I have, after this semester, I'll have a year left. I really related to Jonesy in that way a lot, and I appreciated, I mean, it's not a coming of age story, you're right, in that he's older, but it is a coming of age story in, like, structure and theme. And what we're learning about Jonesy, what Jonesy's learning about himself and the world. And it made me think, and I was like, you know, it would be a really interesting if we started looking at college-aged people through the coming-of-age lens more. I think it would be more, provide us more honest stories, and it would provide us more interesting stories. And I think that King was so smart to do that with Joyland because it's a story that feels right for a college person to be at the center of.
Yeah.
Like, it's maybe a little, it's not even one of his darker works, but it would feel like a lot for this to be happening to one of his kid protagonists.
And he does put kids through a lot in other books.
Oh, yes. I mean, like, you mentioned It. That's a whole thing. But, like, it feels like there's an appreciation for nuance with the story of Linda, right? That requires the protagonist to not be fully, like, integrated into the world in a very cynical way, but a little more mature than an early teen. So I think he really uses the character's age to his advantage.
I agree with that. And there's another big event that we haven't touched on just yet, but Jonesy gets to know this guy, Mike, who is severely ill. He is then introduced to Annie, who we already mentioned because we talked a little about that relationship there. But what he does, which really becomes the turning point of the story, is he sets up a private visit for Mike and Annie to go to the park because him and Annie know that Mike is dying, and Jonesy just wants to do this nice thing for him, just give him this chance to have fun and go on some rides. And it's Mike's presence that kind of helps Linda come out of her haunting of the ride, basically. And his dog is the one who kind of directs your attention to that, which I thought was very interesting, because clearly this story full of dogs, like we said, but this one's real, not just a costume. So you have that going for you there. And the dog just kind of sits in front of Horror House and won't respond when Mike and Annie are calling to him. So you know something's up. And in a way, it almost felt like that was his version of giving a kid power in this story. It's like you let the dog be the one to kind of point you towards the right direction.
I mean, the dog of it all makes sense to me in terms of King's larger works. I know I keep bringing up King's other works, but I mean, when a writer has this much written, it's really hard not to. Dogs are often, like, through King, shown as pure and good, right? And of course, there's a huge exception in Cujo, but even then, that's meant to be a subversion of what we feel King would normally do. And so, like, the dog kind of being, like, in plot terms, a gateway to understanding, I mean, it makes sense to me.
Absolutely. And it's really hard to not bring up his other works while doing this podcast, especially because even though Joyland doesn't specifically tie into any one work of King's, and, you know, that's probably because it's a hard case crime novel and not one of his under his usual publisher, but there's something about his work overall that you can't help but bring up all of these connections, parallels, things like that. And I really liked how he built up to this final act in Joyland. So, you know, the last, let's say, 50 to 75 pages really is where I think things start ramping up a lot. And you have Devin going through not only the motions of missing Wendy, but of him then burying himself in this mystery, and he loses his virginity to Annie, and he has so many things going on all at once that when he has this realization that Lane Hardy is the person who killed Linda all those years ago, and, you know, he has to confront him, and it's not a simple confrontation. It's not like, hey, you just need to tell this person something, which a lot of confrontation is just people kind of building up the courage to say something to someone. But with this, there's a danger element to it.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, even the fact that once he kind of has that final confrontation with the Carney killer, right? And the killer is, like, very adamant that things have been a certain way up until now regarding Jonesy's investigation. Like, it feels like a setup almost, like, oh, if we didn't know that this was being narrated by Jonesy from the future, it would feel like it was going to be one of those works where there's a heroic sacrifice almost. I mean, that's not what happens. And of course, we get psychic stuff involved. So Annie comes in and rescues him. But there is that sense of, even though you know what's happening, like, you know Jonesy himself is going to be okay, it doesn't negate the fact that, like, yeah, it is tense. And the whole last, I mean, what ends up being like the last quarter of the book due to its short size is very tense. And it's a great thriller.
It really is, and it makes me intrigued enough to want to check out some other hard case crime novels by other authors, just because it feels like there's something different about these novels after having read The Colorado Kid and now Joyland that I really enjoy. And I think with King, He is really known as a horror writer, but he does so many other things. You know, this has horror elements to it. Obviously, you have the ghost element of Linda Gray and then the guy he saves, and I'm totally spacing on the coworker's name, but at first Devin thought he might have been the killer, but he removes his gloves as he's saving him and realizes, oh yeah, this dude just wears gloves because he does have really bad psoriasis. And that kind of leads us to Mike being woken up by that guy that Devin saved, because he does eventually pass away. And you have that whole element where Devin did do the right thing, but in the end, it still had a negative outcome. But then there's that twist where the dead guy saves his life, basically, because Annie is quite the sharpshooter, which we find out when they're playing the carnival games and stuff like that. So I liked how he was able to take this mystery and combine all of these characters in a way that things kind of came full circle. He would tell us something about a character and he knew that it was important and would come back around, whereas we necessarily didn't.
Right. It never feels like he is pulling us. I mean, he's pulling us along in terms of we're invested in this mystery, but it never feels like he's winking at us, like when he's telling us about the characters, right? Like Annie being a sharpshooter, like with a great eye and the whole Annie Oakley comparison, it doesn't feel like he's like, oh, do you get it? Like, do you see what's going to happen? It's kind of a natural event that comes up. And then, like, he also sets the stage for more things in these characters' lives. Like, when Tom sees Linda's ghost and is angry and confused, right? Like, that's something that haunts him until he dies. And even though that's not, doesn't tie into the main mystery in terms of the reveal and the conclusion, it's something that affects Tom, and we don't necessarily know how until, you know, it's revealed that Tom died young.
Right.
Like, and that's definitely something we could interpret as being important to that. And also the coworker that he saves that you're forgetting the name of is Eddie.
Okay. I was like, I feel like it started with an E, but I couldn't really put my finger on it, even though there aren't that many names that start with E, really. I was like, Ernie? I don't know. So thank you for that. Like I said before we started recording here, I'm usually terrible at remembering character names, especially ones that kind of just pop in and out. And I know there weren't a lot of characters in this, but I really did like what he did with all of the characters, even ones like Tom and Aaron. And you really feel Devin forming a bond with a lot of these people that he met at this place. And, you know, I think that is something that will happen with summer jobs when you're in college in particular. It's like you get to know these people that you're seeing on a regular basis, but it's not like you're spending every waking moment with them. So when Devin was getting into the mystery and getting help finding stuff out because, you know, one of his coworkers had access to the library, and then her boyfriend was kind of like, you know what, maybe leave her out of this going forward now. And I just liked the little moments like that because they really kind of let you know who these characters were while still leaving Jonesy as the main focus, the main character in the story. You didn't need backstory on every single person we met at Joyland. And you know, Derek, I think I don't have too much more to say about this book. I did really enjoy it, which always a plus. And is there anything else you want to bring up about this book before we wrap up?
I mean, not really. I also really enjoyed it. And it's a departure in many ways for King, but it also definitely fits right in with his other work. You know, it has that magical realism, like I said, and the characters, the way they interact feels very true to King's style. But other than I liked it, and I definitely think it's worth checking out, not really. Also, I think this is kind of unrelated, but I think this would make a great stage play.
You could definitely have some fun props with this one.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's all my thoughts on Joyland.
Awesome. Well, Derek, thank you so much for joining. Is there anything you want to plug again real quick before we go here?
Just once again, I have my podcast called And That's It, featuring Juno and Derek. You can follow us on Twitter at Juno and Derek. You can also follow me on Twitter at DerekSyke17. I think I have a fun Twitter. I tweet the most wild, unhinged stuff you'll ever see. So definitely follow if you want to be scared.
There will be links to all of those things in the show notes for the listeners. And Derek, thank you again.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, that does it for this episode of Chat Cemetery. You can support the podcast on Patreon for $1 a month. You'll get a thank you on the show. For $2 a month, I will send you a Chat Cemetery sticker. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You could also rate and review the show. That's a huge help. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.